May it please the court, counsel, good afternoon, your honors. Keith Donovan for the appellants Bruce Vermell and Pamela Jerga. The case we are here for today centers on a narrow question of whether Bruce Vermell has an entitlement to underinsured motorist benefits through a Liberty Mutual insurance policy. There are a few key factors that I think are essential for the court to consider when analyzing this issue. First, Mr. Vermell was employed by Siemens Corporation. Second, Siemens Corporation provided a compensation package for Mr. Vermell, which included providing him a company car, the Chrysler 300 that is written about in the briefing. Third, that Mr. Vermell was permitted to use the Chrysler 300 for business and personal uses. There were no restrictions on what he could use that vehicle for. Fourth, that the vehicle was kept and maintained by Mr. Vermell at his home. Fifth, that Siemens Corporation purchased a fleet insurance policy from Liberty Mutual. And when it did that, it had the option for its Delaware-based employees to purchase additional coverage if it chose to do so. What Siemens Corporation did in this case is made a choice to purchase optional coverage, underinsured motorist coverage, for the benefit of Mr. Vermell. They paid a premium for that and they purchased that coverage, and in this case, that coverage could have only been for Mr. Vermell's benefit. What Liberty Mutual is attempting to do through its policy language is to definitionally work its way around Delaware law and try to confine the underinsured motorist coverage to those circumstances in which Mr. Vermell was occupying the vehicle. Now, the law in Delaware is very clear, and this court most recently wrote about it in the Castillo versus Clearwater case, that once uninsured or underinsured motorist coverage is purchased, at that point, that coverage becomes a personal coverage. Stated another way, that coverage is not dependent upon the vehicle that the injured person was in when he or she was injured. Now, it is conceded by Liberty Mutual in its briefing papers that...
do you agree that the language of the policy literally restricts coverage to cases where the Siemens employee in this case was occupying the vehicle at the time of the accident?
I do agree that there is a part of the policy that...
Well, what I'm asking is if are you, that the policy language has to be either stricken or disregarded because of supervening statutory or common law, or are you saying that the agreement itself should be construed as providing coverage? It's not clear, what your position is.
Two different positions on that question. First, if this court finds that the policy provision is not ambiguous, then the court has the ability and the authority to strike the provision as being a violation of public policy. The Frank versus Horizon case, which is the underpinning case that this court decided, relates to that very issue, meaning in Frank versus Horizon, there was an other motor vehicle, OMV exclusion, that was crystal clear, that said you could only get that coverage if you were in the vehicle, and this court said that is violative of public policy.
So you're saying that if there is no ambiguity, then we have to read the policy as clearly, in effect, not including Mr. Vermell as a covered insured in these circumstances.
I'm saying if you read the policy that way.
I'm saying don't we have to read the policy that way if the policy is not ambiguous?
If you find it unambiguous, then yes, that's what the policy language says.
All right. In that event.
Yes.
what rule of law requires us to strike or invalidate that restriction in the policy?
The answer is this Supreme Court's prior precedents that go back more than 20 years. This court has written on numerous occasions, first in Frank, most recently in Castillo, that once uninsured, underinsured coverage is purchased, that at that point it cannot be restricted unless the restriction is specifically mandated by statute. There is not any language in the statute that permits a restriction to allow the coverage to be restricted to occupants of the vehicle only.
Well, you know, we're always concerned about what precedent you're asking us to establish. So let's assume for a moment that there was a company with a fleet of cars, and the employees could all use the fleet cars every day, but they stayed at the company's lot. So no one had a designated car, no one took the car home, but every day they went and used a company car. Under the facts of this case, if that had been the situation where your client simply used a fleet car every day, different car every day, and the policy language was the same, would there be coverage?
I think there would not be coverage in that circumstance, and I think Your Honor hits on the distinction that makes this case different. There are company car cases that are exactly as you describe, where an individual drives his or her personal car to work, parks the personal car, and then uses a company vehicle during the day. This case, though, has multiple distinguishing factors. The first being, it was Mr. Bermel's car for business and personal use 100% of the time, and he was the only operator of that vehicle. The second being that Siemens Corporation not only allowed him to use it for his personal use, but he actually paid consideration for the personal use.
Well, and that raises my next question. When we've talked about consideration in our prior cases, the consideration has normally been between the insured and the insurance company. Here, it's Siemens and the company. And so from Liberty Mutual's point of view, how does, if this car was insured under the fleet policy, even though it was for all intents and purposes only your clients, how does Liberty Mutual know that it's taking on extra risk with this particular fleet car and not all the other cars that are in the parking lot used every day?
And it's a very good question. There are two or three reasons that Liberty Mutual knows it has that risk. First, when Siemens requests underinsured motorist coverage, Liberty Mutual knows that the coverage extends to, first of all, individuals, as opposed to some sort of corporate coverage that may apply to property damage. The second piece of the puzzle is, because Siemens permits the use of the vehicle for purely personal uses, presumably something that's part of the underwriting process when they write that coverage, they necessarily know that Mr. Bermel will be driving that car on the weekend.
But my question is, were those distinctions unique to this car? Because it's my impression that it was insured as part of the fleet, and the fleet could have cars that were used, as I said, by employees on a daily basis, but not for personal use. And then we have your client's car. I'm assuming the cars in the fleet used on a daily basis all had underinsured motorist coverage, because what Siemens would be doing would be protecting its employees while driving a fleet car from an underinsured motorist.
Your Honor, the short answer to that question is I'm not certain how Siemens handled all of the fleet. I do know as part of what was produced is there's a very large 600-plus page policy that does delineate multiple state coverages in there. And there are many states in which there was uninsured, underinsured coverage written. The distinction here that I think is important is if you read Liberty Mutual's papers, everyone agrees that if Bruce Bermel was driving that Chrysler 300 on the weekend for purely personal reasons in New York and the exact same accident occurred, he would be covered by this underinsured motorist policy.
But he didn't.
Understood.
And one of the questions is there any case that you can point us to which holds that in those circumstances, that is where a person in Mr. Brunell's position is using his own personally owned vehicle, you know, not in the course of employment, but for purely personal purposes, and unrelated to any vehicle owned by the company, that there is coverage under the employer's underinsured motorist policy?
The answer is yes. And I'm going to answer that question. I was trying to answer Justice Holland's question that the underwriting accounts for the personal use of the vehicle outside of business purposes by way of concession. If that vehicle had been driven on a weekend for personal use, he's covered. So the underwriting with respect to Liberty Mutual, they have already assumed and then paid for that risk. Justice Jacobs, with respect to your question, the answer is yes. The Grzybowski case, it's not exactly the same factual scenario, but in Grzybowski, there's a commercial policy that covered Mr. Grzybowski's company, and he was injured while driving his personally owned motorcycle. Not for work purposes. The motorcycle was actually uninsured. He was injured, and he presented a case against the commercial policy that insured his business and business vehicles. Now, the distinction the court made there,
He was the business.
Well, he was, but the distinction went, your question was, can someone be driving a personal vehicle purely for personal reasons and get UIM coverage under a commercial policy? And absolutely, and that's the circumstance where it occurred.
But it's critical, maybe I should have, you know, built this in more clearly into the question, that we're talking about, you know, not an employer who's in effect employing himself.
Well,
an employer who's completely separate from the employee.
I understand that distinction, but I will tell you that if you follow the payments and the underwriting in this case to its logical conclusion, I would suggest to you that that is a difference without a legal distinction, because here we must assume that when Liberty Mutual accepted the premium, they knew that they were paying potentially for underinsured motorist benefits for anything business or personal that occurred with that vehicle. I think everyone agrees to that.
That vehicle is if that vehicle was singled out from the fleet policy, but I suspect that the policy didn't distinguish between business and personal use. They were insuring the fleet, and then if the corporation wanted to let somebody take a fleet car home for a weekend, if an injury had occurred during the weekend, they would have had underinsured motorist coverage, unless there was some exclusion in the policy. And I'm not even sure they could have an exclusion.
I think they could not have an exclusion in that circumstance, but what Your Honor is talking about is a circumstance where Siemens would have said, okay, Mr. Brunell, you can take a fleet car home for the weekend. And I agree with you, if they did that, there would be no exclusion that would fit within Delaware law that would allow them to deny underinsured motorist coverage. In this case, he was permitted and did in fact have the car at home every single day, 100% of the time. And there is still no exclusion or definition that should prevent him from getting to the coverage. If I can, Justice Jacobs said something that I think is important for us to focus on here. While there is a different corporate entity involved in this case, in the end, if we agree, and I think everybody does, that he would have been covered if he was driving that vehicle for personal reasons, if we agree with that, then the only question is, can Liberty Mutual, through a policy provision, limit underinsured motorist coverage based solely on the vehicle he was occupying at the time of the loss? And that's what this court has emphatically said is improper.
Well, let's test, you know, see how far your theory goes.
Okay.
Let's change the facts slightly. Instead of the injured plaintiff here riding his motorcycle for personal purposes in New York, let's assume he's on vacation in Tierra del Fuego, and he's rented a car, gets into an accident, and is injured. Under your theory, You know, if there's underinsured, if the liability policy for the other driver is not sufficient, then the Siemens policy would be chargeable, even in those circumstances. Isn't that correct?
I think that is correct, just like you would have coverage under your personal policy.
If he was, you know, riding a dog sled in the Arctic and ran into some other dog sled that happened to be insured, same result.
Well, I understand your point. I'm not sure a dog sled makes it to the motor vehicle, but the point here is that the coverage difference, that what Your Honor is trying to do is make a distinction based upon the vehicle. This is a personal coverage. And this court has said, unlike other coverages, this one is personal to the individual. And in this case, who else could the underinsured coverage have been for?
Our case that says that the underinsured motorist coverage is personal to the individual did not involve these facts. Isn't that correct? I mean, there's still a gap here between that glittering generalization and getting down to this case.
May I answer that with a question or a hypothetical? If Bruce Bermel, and this happens to be true for him, but hypothetically, let's assume that he's single or divorced and he doesn't have a motorcycle. He's provided a car by the corporation that he works for. It's his only vehicle. It has underinsured motorist coverage. And I take him to the store, and I get rear-ended, and I've got minimum limits on my car. Can he get to that UIM coverage? It's his only vehicle that he owns, business and personal use. If it's treated like a personal policy to him, then absolutely, just like every one of us can in that circumstance. And what I'm suggesting to you is the fact that he was on a motorcycle or in New York or wherever he was, those are distinctions without a difference. If you accept as true that he was covered for his personal use of the vehicle, because it is that fact that is completely different from every other company car case, complete use of the vehicle for personal use.
To come to grips with is that we're not talking about his personal use of the company's own vehicle. We're talking about the personal use of the plaintiff's own vehicle and in circumstances that have no connection at all to the company.
So if you're correct with that question, then if Mr. Bermel is a single person and he wants to have underinsured motorist coverage like every other Delawarean has, what he would have to do is he would have to accept the company car, and then he would have to purchase another car. And then he would have to purchase UIM coverage on the other car, because if he doesn't do that, under your theory, he would never get the benefit of the personal UIM coverage that should attach to him through the one car that he owns.
Because he doesn't own a car or an automobile insurance policy, he'd be in no different situation than a person who doesn't own a car and doesn't have a policy of insurance. He'd be entitled to your UIM coverage. He'd be entitled to the tortfeasor if there was a different tortfeasor's UIM coverage. But why should, because he doesn't own this automobile and doesn't own the policy, why should he be, as a policy matter, in a better situation than someone else who doesn't own a car?
Because he, in essence, does have a vehicle through the mechanics of how Siemens provided him this vehicle for business and personal use.
None of the distinctions to Justice Holland's original hypothetical that you posed had anything to do with the payments that Mr. Bermel made to his employer. I'm struggling a little bit to see what difference those payments make.
It is a factor. When you look at the company car cases, the company car cases that favor the insurance company primarily rest on the fact that the vehicle was not available for personal use outside the context of business. What I'm trying to get forth in my papers is not only was he allowed to have that personal use by Siemens, something that Liberty Mutual would have known, but he also pays consideration for that. So my question to the court is, when somebody in Mr. Bermel's situation pays money for the benefit of the personal use, what is it that attaches to that consideration? And by analogy, in the nailbone case, this court explained that that is a distinction that is a very, that makes a very important difference because it entitles him to something in return.
If I owned the same policy of insurance, but as an individual, and I had lent Mr. Bermel my car, he approached me to borrow the car to go on vacation. And I said, fine, fill up the tank, give me $50 when you get back from my trouble. And he drives the car to New York, parks it, and gets in an automobile accident. Is he entitled to UIM coverage under my policy, even though he would be excluded because he wasn't driving the automobile under the explicit terms of the policy?
You mean if he got injured in another car or in your car?
No, on his motorcycle.
I think in that circumstances he probably would not be covered because he didn't have continuous exclusive use or personal use of that vehicle all the time. He had a limited use of that vehicle, as you described. If he got injured while in the car, he would be covered. But again, that's the distinction that makes this case different.
He would have unlimited use for the time I lent it to him, just as he has unlimited use for the time Siemens extends him the automobile.
But the insurance coverage, in your case, the difference is here, Liberty Mutual knows that they are insuring a vehicle for personal use 100% of the time.
Now, what is the basis for that knowledge?
The basis for that knowledge is that when they wrote the underinsured policy, and I should back up for a second. I'm making an assumption because we haven't had any factual discovery here that Siemens' permission when they're giving this vehicle to their employees for business and personal use is something that Liberty Mutual would have known about. And I say that in part because the representations in the briefing papers are that he would have been covered for his personal use of the vehicle. So I'm deducing my way into that fact based upon the papers because he otherwise would not have been covered. And I am already a couple minutes over my rebuttal time, which I would like to reserve unless there are further questions for me now.
Very well.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Justice Holland. Good afternoon, Justices. May it please the Court, Nancy Cobb on behalf of Liberty Mutual. Just a couple of housekeeping matters. The actual appropriate defendant in this case is Liberty Mutual Insurance Company, not Liberty Mutual Fire Insurance Company. It is an error that I thought we had corrected at the trial court level, and apparently we did not. So my apologies to the Court. As with any contract, the beginning place for an analysis is with the language of the contract. In this instance, the contracting parties were Siemens and its affiliates and Liberty Mutual Insurance Company. Policy language was written which tells us how we look to determine whether someone is covered under this policy. And for purposes of the UM or UIM endorsement, we start with the provision that says, and this is at page A12 of the appendix, we will pay all sums the, quote, insured, unquote, is legally entitled to recover as damages from the owner or driver of, and talks about an uninsured or underinsured motor vehicle. The term insured is in quotes, so therefore we go to the next section, which is conveniently enough entitled, who is an insured? And it explicitly, unambiguously, and quite simply says, if the named insured is designated in the declarations as a partnership, limited liability company, corporation, or other form of organization, then the following are, quote, insureds, unquote. And that is anyone occupying a covered auto or a temporary substitute for a covered auto. So, and that is how one becomes a, quote, insured under this policy.
And that's the end of the definition. Is that correct?
Essentially. It does go on to talk about...
So your position is an artificial entity, a corporation, bought insurance that covered anybody in a car they owned.
Correct.
And to the extent anyone was operating a car they owned, was involved with an uninsured, underinsured motorist, they got the benefit of the policy.
Correct.
But to the extent they weren't actually in or operating the car, then there was no coverage.
Right. They do not meet the definition of an insured.
So that would, and it, as I understand it, it wouldn't matter whether the car was assigned to you or that you got it out of the fleet, or whether you were doing something for work or you're doing something on the weekend, if you're in the company car, you're covered.
Correct.
What if you step outside the company car to change a tire? Are you covered?
I would believe so. I think that would meet the definition of occupy under the court's definitions of the term occupy.
Well, the argument, I think we all understand the contract language does not include Mr. Brummel as an insured in these circumstances. The argument that is being advanced to us is, well, even if that's so, that contractual limitation is invalid under Delaware law because the argument goes UIM coverage is personal to the policy beneficiary. Can you address that argument?
Yes, thank you, Justice Jacobs. This court in the Frank case and most recently in the Castillo case talked in terms of the coverage being personal to the insured. And in those instances, they talked about it being personal to a named insured, to the party to the contract, the party who paid consideration, a premium, who engaged in the negotiations, who purchased the coverage. That is not Mr. Brummel in this instance. That is Siemens.
So you're saying you still have to come back to the terms of the contract in order to understand the proper sense of the word personal to the insured?
Correct.
As it's used in our cases?
Yes.
And as a matter of practicality, what you're saying is if you're a company employee and you're going to have a company car, as the facts of our case show, the wise employee would say, I want to be added as a named insured. And if that was done, where he was added as a named insured, he would probably have had coverage in this case.
I would think so, and I'm not aware of anything that would, as a legal matter, prevent that. I don't know as a practical matter if an underwriting company would allow that. But
the company may not want to do it, but right. To the extent you're in this situation, that's one way to protect yourself.
Correct.
Okay, so you're saying there is no supervening rule of law, regarding the, coverage being personal that would invalidate this contract language?
I don't believe that there is, right. Justice Jacobs.
Well, there's a second argument that's, I think, being advanced, and that is the Delaware cases make it clear that the coverage that is available by statute cannot be diminished contractually, by the insurance company. And I think that's where the payment that Mr. Brummel is making to Siemens for the use of the Chrysler 300 comes in. The argument, I believe, is that he's paying for, or at least some of that payment has to be attributed to the cost of the insurance, and therefore, for him not to get uninsured motorist coverage in these circumstances is a unlawful diminution of the benefit.
I understand that is the argument. Respectfully, we disagree with that, and we do so on a couple of grounds. First is that there is no rule or no authority to suggest that payment of consideration from someone who is not a party to the contract or for whom the benefits are not being, who is not paying specifically for a benefit, can transform that individual into a named insured. And in essence, that's what the appellant is trying to do here. That's what Mr. Brummel wants to do. He wants to convert himself from being an insured or a covered person to the insured.
So you're saying from the company's point of view, he's a stranger to the policy when he's not in the car because he's not paying consideration to the company. And as far as the company's concerned, they don't know whether it's a fleet car or a car that's exclusively assigned to him. And so in the absence of trying to make a personal distinction, it's just a fleet car.
Correct. Yes.
Well, I heard from Mr. Donovan that the papers allowed the assumption that Liberty Mutual was aware that this vehicle was going to be personally used by employees of the company. So it's not just the strict, narrow fleet version car, but it's a car that's going to be used for business, going to be used for pleasure on the weekends, and that Liberty Mutual knew that. Is that accurate or not?
I cannot answer that question, Justice Ridgely, and I apologize. But there is nothing on the record to suggest what considerations or what the communications were between underwriting and the broker on this who would have put this fleet policy into place.
Well, does this policy that is in the record list all the cars in the fleet, or is this particular car that Mr. Vermeil had singled out in any way?
To answer the questions, all of the vehicles are listed at some point, of recognizing that there can be substitute and replacement vehicles. Mr. Vermeil's vehicle is not singled out anywhere in the policy as either being having special coverage, being recognized, or being specifically assigned to Mr. Vermeil.
Let me ask my question another way. Does the policy expressly exclude personal use of the vehicle, or limit it to business use of the vehicle?
It does not. In fact, the definition that we go back to of who is an insured is anyone occupying the vehicle, and it does not distinguish whether you are occupying that vehicle for business or pleasure, or whether you are the employee or an employee's spouse or a hitchhiker you pick up on the side of the roadway. If you are an occupant of that vehicle, you are entitled to coverage.
So that covers personal use?
Yes, it does.
Suppose we change the facts, just tweak the facts very slightly. We are entitled to assume that there is a payment of some character that Mr. Vermeil is making to his employer relating to the use of the car. That is the Siemens car. Let's assume that the parties agree and put it in writing that that payment represents a fraction of the out-of-pocket cost the company is paying for the insurance. Okay. Would that change the outcome?
I don't believe so. The fact that some consideration is arguably associated with the use of the vehicle
Not just the use of the vehicle, but for the insurance.
Oh, for the insurance.
Which would include the UIM, obviously.
I don't think that it would, Justice Jacobs. I mean, when you rent a vehicle, if you do not decline coverage because you have your own, you are paying for insurance. That doesn't make you an insured under Avis's policy, other than when you're in the Avis vehicle. When you presumably some portion of whatever it is you're paying as your daily rental fee covers the fact that Avis has to have insurance on the vehicle. To go to Vice Chancellor Glasscock's example, if you loan your vehicle to someone and they pay you a nominal fee for the exclusive use of it to, you know, borrow a truck, say, to transport this motorcycle to New York, that doesn't transform that payment into payment of the premiums, and that doesn't transform the person who is handing over a few dollars into a named insured. And that's really what the appellants are trying to do here.
Let me ask that just slightly differently. Let's suppose you have two roommates. One person owns the car, mm-hmm. and they're paying the insurance. But the non-owner roommate says specifically, I'll give you half of the insurance premium every month, and that is, in fact, what happens. The fact that they're contributing towards paying the insurance premium doesn't give them any relationship with the insurance policy as far as the insurance company is concerned.
It does not. It may, in an individual policy, you may have a slightly different outcome, but it does not transform that individual into a named insured or an individual with a relationship with the company.
Even if the agreement between the named insured, Siemens, and the employee, Vermeil, explicitly states that Vermeil's monthly payments represent a partial reimbursement for the cost of the insurance?
Again, I don't see the distinction there, Justice Jacobs, because the relationship that we're looking at is the relationship between Siemens and the issuing company.
So there would have to be some official recognition or contractual recognition by the insurance company itself.
Correct.
And whatever private agreement the named insured and its employee enter into is essentially irrelevant. Is that your...
That is our position.
Can I go back to something that maybe has already been resolved, except in my mind? The language of this policy, as far as I'm concerned, on its face, says, in essence, you get coverage, you are an insured, as long as you're sitting in this car.
Correct.
Or standing next to it. and so what Siemens has done here is it's bought insurance that is car specific rather than person specific, so that the insured is the driver of the car, not the person. So, and in fact, I thought I heard somebody say that somebody who's not even an employee, if they're driving the car, if they got their hands on one of Siemens' cars, they're covered. So it's the car that's being insured, not the person.
Well, you know, the difficulty here is that when the named insured is a corporation, a right. corporation is a legal fiction, but with all due respect, it doesn't. We're not insuring the vehicle per se. We're insuring people in the vehicle, and what we're saying is that your coverage exists while you are in that vehicle.
Right, but isn't that inconsistent with our policy and our law as it has been expressed, that you get insurance and that insurance follows you around because it's personal to you?
But
and what has been attempted here is a way of circumventing that by saying, no, it's not the person, it's the car that we're insuring and whoever happens to be driving it. And is that going to be something that should be permitted when, with respect to all other policies, if you tried to have your insured be limited in that fashion, it would not be acceptable?
The difficulty is that when the named insured, the party contracting, the party purchasing the insurance, the party paying for the insurance, is a corporation, there is no way that at least I can envision where you can make that coverage personal, where you can't have the coverage follow Siemens around. All you can do is have it, and that's why if you read the other portion of the definition of who is an insured, if the named insured is an individual, then the named insured, that individual, and family members are considered, quote, insureds.
Well, but I guess what I'm getting at is that Siemens could have gotten a list of its employees, or whichever employees were going to be allowed to use the fleet cars, and put them on the list. And now they're named insureds. But rather, and if they had done that, then this policy would cover them, even if they were on the motorcycle in New York. But instead of doing that, they bought a policy that it seems intentionally tries to limit the extent to which individuals who are given use of these cars will be covered.
I would respectfully disagree that it's an effort to limit the number of individuals who may be covered. In fact, it is more expansive because it clearly covers anyone who is in the vehicle. Doesn't limit the purpose for which that individual may be in the vehicle.
Right, but it keeps them from being named insureds if they're not in the car.
Well, it keeps them from being insured if they're
right,
not in the car.
Right. Yeah. So you've got insurance that comes up and disappears, and it. whether it's in effect or not has to do with whether you're in the car.
Correct.
And I'm saying that that seems inconsistent with our law that says that insurance is something that follows the person, not the vehicle.
And Justice Berger, respectfully, I would disagree that it is inconsistent, because the Frank case, the Castillo case, even to some extent the Grzybowski case, which is a Superior Court decision, focuses on the individuals who go out and purchase the insurance and an effort, presumably an effort by insurance companies, to limit the coverage that they provide to the people that they insure. In this instance, if Mr. Bermell is covered, if he is transformed into a named insured, an individual named insured, then not only is Siemens covering Mr. Bermell 24/7, they're covering Ms. Jerga 24/7. They're covering any Bermell children 24/7.
Right, and if they were to add all of the employees worldwide as named insureds in addition to the corporation, you would have that very broad scope of coverage, but it would be actuarially a very different kind of policy with, I would gather, an entirely different premium structure.
Yes, I would venture to say it would be a non-existent policy. But, and that is part of the issue that, you know, then you run into circumstances. What happens when someone is terminated? What happens if, you know,
Well, you're saying no, you know, no insurance company would issue a policy like that.
I cannot envision one.
But doesn't the UIM coverage follow the insured here in case of property damage? If an uninsured driver got into an automobile accident with a piece of equipment owned by Siemens or ran into the home office, mm-hmm. and there was property damage greater than the insurance policy covered for liability, Siemens would be able to successfully argue that it had uninsured motorist coverage to cover that property damage, correct?
Correct.
Mr. Donovan made an argument that if we allow, as a matter of public policy, the type of policy you've issued here, it puts drivers of automobiles, which are owned by the company, in a uniquely poor situation, in that if they bought their own car, presumably they would get uninsured motorist coverage. But if they don't own a car and one's provided by the company, so they don't buy a car, and then they're in a third-party accident, despite their desire to have uninsured motorist coverage, they would have been frustrated in their intent to get it because they couldn't buy uninsured motorist coverage without owning an automobile. Can you comment on that argument?
Yes. If we assume that these individuals would not, more likely than not, be if it's their only vehicle, be occupying the vehicle, at which point they would have coverage.
But his hypothetical involved riding with a third party,
right,
getting in an accident, mm-hmm. and not having uninsured motorist coverage that, in his hypothetical, the individual would have wanted to purchase but couldn't have purchased that product on the market because he didn't own a car.
And honestly, if that is the case, then that individual is in no different scenario than other folks who don't own vehicles have vehicles registered to them for various and sundry reasons.
Is uninsured motorist coverage available without owning an automobile?
Not to my knowledge, because it is not, generally speaking, available in a vacuum. My understanding is it's available as part of an insurance package, including liability, no fault. So it is not something that you can purchase. However, you can always purchase other kinds of insurance. You can purchase disability insurance. You can purchase medical insurance, health insurance, things that will take the place of UIM coverage in the event that this were to be the scenario. I would also note that there's nothing on this record to suggest that Mr. Bermell had any concerns or wished to purchase underinsured motorist coverage to protect him.
But you can't purchase insurance for pain and suffering.
Pardon? No.
There's one other public policy argument raised, at least in the reply brief, and that is that if we allow this policy, we're opening the floodgates to the selling of an insurance product that would insure a household, the household being the named insured, and therefore limit the UIM coverage only to those members of the household that were driving automobiles. I guess my first question is, was that raised below? And second, did you want to respond to it at all?
It wasn't raised below. And secondly, I would honestly respond to it if I really could follow it. But
well, I may not have been clear.
Right.
That may not be Mr. Donovan's problem. That may be my problem.
Well, you know, it strikes me that it would be interesting if my husband decided to incorporate the cops, and now we become a company and we're only covered when we're occupying a vehicle. I just think that is a scenario that is so far out of the realm of realistic response that it should not trouble the court in its interpretation of what is a unambiguous contract. I see that my time is almost up. Unless the court has any other questions, I will be seated. Thank you.
Again, thank you, Your Honors. I'd like to address something that I've heard raised by Justice Jacobs and Justice Holland, because what I'm sensing is there is a concern that if you are to find coverage in this circumstance, then suddenly this one policy insures thousands of people across the country or across the world. That issue was specifically addressed in the Fisher versus National Union case. Now remember, Fisher, an opinion written by then Judge Quillen, addressed a police officer who was in a Newcastle County police car. He was outside the vehicle when he got struck by another vehicle. The first question was, is he occupying the vehicle? And the court ultimately determined that he was not. Now that's critical here, because had he been in the vehicle, the commercial policy that covered Newcastle County provided him coverage. If he was not occupying the vehicle, then he would not be provided coverage. The exact same scenario that we're dealing with. When that case went up to the Supreme Court said he was not occupying. It went back down to the Superior Court, and then the issue became, was this police officer an insured? Our exact issue here. The court found an ambiguity in a commercial policy that talks about a commercial entity, and that on one hand, and then talks about bodily injury and family members on another hand. It looked at the reasonable expectation of the parties, and it made a couple of key conclusions. The court concluded, presumably, if you purchase underinsured motorist coverage, you know that that coverage must exist for somebody, for an individual. It cannot be for the benefit of an entity. But secondarily, Newcastle County argued to the court, if you find in the favor of the police officer, then we have 1,100 or 3,000 police officers who are going to be covered by this. And the court said no, that the reasonable expectations of the parties are limited to the anticipated drivers of the vehicle. So the court in Fisher was not concerned about opening the floodgates to thousands of people being insured. And in fact, in this very case, there is no such concern. Because in every insurance policy, you're going to have permissible and non-permissible drivers. And in this case, Mr. Bermel is the only driver. Justice Berger articulated the argument as I would have. This is a workaround. This court has said some coverages follow the vehicle and other coverages are personal. UM and UIM coverages are personal. If you accept that as true, as I do, because this court has said it, then it follows that it is impermissible for an insurance company, by an exclusion or by definition, to limit that. And Vice Chancellor Glascott, just have a couple seconds left.
You're
I'm done.
You're done.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you both for your arguments. The court will take this matter under advisement and recess.